Don't Make an Ideology, a podcast about the 69th best television show of the 21st century. I am one of your hosts, Ian. As always, I'm here with
Ryan Twin. Hello.
And we are at the end. The show's over. 24 famously canceled after a stunning first season. What could have been? That's what this episode will be about. Where would the show have gone after this?
If this show was made today, it would be like at least announced as a limited series, right?
Do they make shows that aren't anymore?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they make 24 episode limited series either. So maybe not in this form, but still.
I could see. Because when they brought it back, for the pseudo season 9, it was like in that limited series format, even though it was still in real time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Real time, but then there's a jump in both Live Another Day and Legacy.
Okay,
both those are 12 episode real time deals. I assume that's like just partly the nature of production and, you know, them not having the capability to really make long episode seasons anymore, I guess. But, I mean...
Law and Order is probably still doing it, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Sitcoms, I think, are still doing it for the most part. Mm-hmm. Although with some inconsistency, I would guess.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I guess that's true. It's just sort of strange just to revisit this. And with that in mind, with knowing how much the television landscape has changed.
Yeah, I mean, they can't even squeak out, you know, 20 episodes for like a new Star Trek show. And if you can't make 20, 24, 28, whatever episodes of Star Trek, then we've fallen so far.
It's the, how long is the Strange New World season? It's like 10 episodes?
I think it's only 10 or 12. I think Discovery has been like 12. Mm-hmm. But I've only watched a little bit of it. But, you know, I think Strange New Worlds is like trying to get back the old magic, right? So to me, part of the old magic is you make too many episodes and about half of them are just wild gambits that either fall flat or pay off in insane ways. And I just don't think, I think it's just so, I don't know, this feels like such a ready-made opinion. The margins on everything are so tight that there just has to be, like, there isn't that spirit of excess, I guess, anymore, where it's like, well, we're just going to make a ton of episodes of television, and now everything, I mean, the limited series format, I can see why it's attractive to, like, streaming services and stuff, but to me, it's surprising that, like, actors continue to go along with it and haven't put up more fight about it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I don't know how the Stranger Things cast is getting paid for, what, a 7-episode season that has, like, a 2.5-hour season finale?
Yeah, geez. And then isn't that even, like, the first part of the fourth season?
Yeah.
They're doing that kind of thing?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I thought this was going to be it. But then there's another season after this, even after they've gone to the length of a 2.5-hour finale.
Yeah, this is the argument I was making the other day on Twitter, which is that, I mean, I feel like there's a world in which we get back to the kind of early movie logic of having serialized storytelling, like shorter format, hour and a half episodes playing before, you know, longer features. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that'll happen, but if I ever get Tom Cruise on the line, I bet you he could make it happen. He's saving the movies, and I'm going to tell him, hey, have you ever heard of this guy, Louis Fouillade? I think you'd really dig his whole vibe.
I mean, Pinkerton did compare Ethan Hunt running on the rooftops in Fallout to Fouillade. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's definitely possible.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. Jack does a good amount of running in these two episodes.
Oh, my gosh. There's... I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but man, you know, if we want to talk about movie magic, Stephen Hopkins brings it for the finale.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, well, I think that we should, I think we've been making that trend towards talking about episodes more individually, but I think we have to do it.
Yes.
In part because the episodes are so wildly different in quality, or at least like, in what it's trying, when they're trying to do, or like plotting wise and things like that. And we should also say that we're covering the hours from 10 p.m. to midnight, not 12 p.m. midnight on the on day one.
Yeah, this is apparently the only season where they use midnight instead of 12 a.m.
Yeah, which I don't remember if they have any others that like begin and end at 12 a.m.
No, this is the only one that takes place over a whole like a single day. All the other ones apparently cut across 2 days, you know, still a 24-hour period, but
yeah,
I kind of, there's something sort of poetic about midnight.
Oh yeah, and they should have just gone for like noon also.
Yeah,
I guess it's not quite, but you know, like the Western parallels as well.
Yeah. It was 12 p.m. It wasn't noon, was it?
Yeah, it's just 12 p.m.
Yeah,
but yeah, midnight, like it you know, it feels right for. I mean, 24, even though, you know, obviously it covers a lot of time, I feel like, I don't know, like, it seems like the kind of show that would lend itself especially well to night. I don't know if that's necessarily been the case, but I think it does work for these two wraparound episodes.
Yeah, I think that there are later seasons that end at, like, 4 p.m., which just seems wrong. It just seems like you can't have your season finale take place at 4 p.m. You know, like that's the worst. Like 4 p.m. and 11 a.m. are like the two worst times that you could have that.
That's
happening.
That's a good point. They should have had it end at 6 p.m. one time and have the last hour just be in happy hour.
Yeah. just like everything's over, but like everybody goes out for a drink. So episode 23. I do want to say that I really. I actually, this is another Shapiro directed episode, and and you know, I don't know how we'll end up falling on our individual opinions of this, but I did really love the opening establishing shot with the split screen effect. It was just sort of interesting. It reminded me a little bit of the way that Lynch does the establishing shots in The Return. Because it's
those are The Return, right?
In The Return. Because here it felt like. Not even looking at, like, it felt like it wasn't an establishing shot in the sense that it doesn't tell us the plate, like it was such a focus on like light and negative space. It was just really interesting. It was just a tiny moment, but I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I don't think anybody else has really done that.
I mean, it just has like a nice, like, you know, it's like the thing where Ellie looks best at a distance at night. It's like a perfect sort of encapsulation of that. Like, it sort of, it feels like a sort of recognition that this is the final act in a way that the rest of the episode really does not feel like that.
It does not.
This episode, like, this episode is kind of, I mean, you know, most of 24 is really a mess structurally, but especially this episode, it's just insane how much they're trying to throw in and like just like bring back at the same time.
They really had to take a shortcut here. They were really up against it. I think Jack at one point says it's almost over, hang in there, and I really felt like he was talking to us, the viewers.
It's really I mean, I don't know even where to really go because each part is just sort of crazy. I mean, I guess we could just start with Palmer simply because it amuses me greatly how like they have him leaning in at one in the first scene, then the next scene he just is like juggling. He's juggling this possible thing that Jack is going to unwittingly help assassinate him again. And like, but he also finds a time to just summarily fire Patty. And he has a great delivery there. He's like, pack up, get out. Sort of thing. Like, ask me for a reference.
We get two episodes of Mean Palmer.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of wild. Like, a weird way to end this, especially considering how the show itself ends. Like, really, the last stuff we see of Palmer is just him raging out for two episodes. Like, not necessarily without reason, but it's a weird choice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the problem with the Palmer stuff generally, I think the finale handles it a lot better than this one.
Yes,
but it's just like it's sort of the feeling where it doesn't really feel like it's been necessarily building as much to the end game being him. Like breaking up with Sherry, like you can definitely of course see those like, elements, but it's just so focused on the like present tense nature of the Ferragamo stuff and stuff with Keith and with Carl that Sherry doesn't, and like because there's just been this sort of, it's been mostly dealing with that, and it's only been the last couple episodes that the Sherry stuff has really come to the fore in a way, or like it felt it's felt consistent, so it's, it doesn't quite work.
It feels as in well from some way like a return to the early part of the show where they really like the Palmers were gonna be important, and so we had to stick with them, but there wasn't a lot of structure to what they're like. What the conflict was there or what was going on. Like, I mean, I think like the meat of the Palmer arc is like an 8-episode arc that works really well for a little bit. And the problem with that is it's a 24-episode season. So so on the front end, the lead up just feels excruciating. And then on the back end, they're sort of left with a lot of loose ends. And it becomes like the show, I think by necessity really wants to hone in on Jack. And that kind of leaves us both, I think, with less Palmer screen time. I mean, in the last few episodes, I think we've had, I think the only episode of the season without Penny Johnson-Gerald, which sort of tells you how the Palmer stuff is going. And yeah, it just, it feels like, particularly the Patty stuff, feels like a last Hail Mary to be like, okay, we got to have them do something for these few episodes before the ending. Instead of, like, just kind of viewing this marriage in like the last hours of like what will be its dissolution, which would be anticlimactic, but in my opinion would play better against the super climactic Jack stuff. Like if you just kind of have these people whose day has been kind of ruined and has exposed kind of like the you know the rot in the middle of their lives, I think that would be like affecting in a way that the insane conniving really is that is not. Although again, you know, Penny Johnson-Gerald is doing a great job of selling this by just going and also like, I mean, just the Palmer stuff here, I think by necessity has to be turned up to 11 in every scene, which is why we get these these rage sequences.
I mean, like, you could have probably taken out the Patty stuff and just have it be about Sherry like deciding whether or not to reveal that he's alive. Like, it's like the Patty stuff like feels extraneous simply because of how extreme the rest of it is. So like that sort of tap dancing around trying to get it to like, you know, oh, is he gonna go for it? Is he not gonna go for it? Like it feels doesn't like really quite work.
And it's wrapped up without any consequence really, other than that this character is kind of summarily dispatched. And we don't even get. Like, again, I think there's a complicated way you could have played it where it's like, you know, what is she supposed to do here? She's been taken advantage of. And I think maybe even a kind of critique of David Palmer could have, like, come out of that. And you can see these moments where they're maybe trying to do something like that. And they just haven't put in the work to make it happen. Like, this guy wants to be president, but how bad? You know, and other people want him to be president really bad. And like some of that is, you know, some of that is just the nature of doing these kind of like sort of like political intrigue type plots is you kind of have to buy in a little bit. But yeah, the Patty stuff is so, it comes out of the blue and then it basically just gets written off in the easiest way possible.
Yeah. I mean, like, I do think it's just like a sign of how easily as dispatches that he has this time to just have this confrontation with her and then come back to Jack. it's just really funny how quickly it's done in this like sort of very tense window.
Yeah, and also we get another example of like how does no one see this this bomb coming.
I mean, Jack, I mean, he probably doesn't have like bomb detection stuff in his car, but still
it's like, a phone with a bomb in it.
Like it's just like it's this really bulky phone too.
I mean, I know, again, I think one thing I do like about these later episodes is that we return to something that really disappeared in the middle of the show, which is just kind of like the magic technology of CTU. And also now, you know, the bad guys.
But I mean, like, I would have thought that they would have a little bit more like explosives in it, because like as is, like that, the size of that explosion, it doesn't look like it probably would enough to definitively take out both Palmer and Jack.
It's for sure taking out Palmer with his ear to the phone, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think like maybe you get lucky on Jack.
Yeah, I feel like.
But well, they also have Jack's daughter as like that insurance, I think.
Yeah, that too. I just like to think that the Drazens, I don't know, I feel like the show even doesn't have like necessarily the greatest handle on whether they are hyper efficient or not.
Yeah, it's all over.
I feel like yeah, they're sort of like, I don't know, you have the sort of thing where literally the mastermind has been holed up in a prison for years.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can forgive that a little bit, but still, like, the explosion doesn't seem quite large enough.
Yeah, their machinations are roughly as consistent as Dennis Hopper's accent. which is like a kind of like, you know, it's poetry, it rhymes kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Let's see. Just, like, so much is happening in these, in episode 23, but also it feels like not a ton is happening in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so Kim, we kind of went over this last time, but, you know, Kim is kidnapped again and just kind of sits around a lot.
Yeah.
And that really, like, deadens the Drazen stuff because they're just kind of sitting there waiting.
Right.
We get,
but I will,
we get
I will
less
say her...
Hopper in this episode, too.
Yeah, we do. We get actually less in the... in the finale too, like it,
yeah,
I think that actually Andre probably speaks more in these last two episodes than he has in the entire series beforehand.
I think fairly, like, close,
weirdly,
yeah.
Weirdly he's like, I don't know, taking more of that sort of center stage in terms of actually just talking with Jack and then talking with Palmer, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, like you do the get that great Hopper moment. It's like, it must be wonderful for you to reunite.
Well, and I think, like, I think this is maybe a trope of 24 that we'll have to track, is that I do think that the middle management does a lot more talking. And yeah. now that Victor's in the picture, like, he is the big bad, and Andre is now middle management in a way that he wasn't before, where he was kind of like the shadowy figure that was, you know, working through intermediaries, and now he is the intermediary. But that that does have the sort of perverse effect of being like, what is, like, I thought Victor was supposed to be, like, the baddest dude, right?
Yeah.
And they really, these two episodes really drop the ball on
that one. Yeah, they do. I mean, yeah, like, we do get some, like, good moments. Like, there was one, I can't remember, like, maybe ever adopt, like, there was like, just, like, a few, like, really good line readings, but there's not really a lot otherwise. I kind of do like how, like, more emotional Andre gets in these two episodes.
Yeah.
Like, I really like the scene where he's talking with Kim.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like this, yeah. It just, like, has this sort of, you know, he's, in a way, he's not wrong. I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing about that 24 can never reconcile, is, like, how much of a bad guy Jack is.
Yeah, there's that great exchange where she's like, my father's a good man, and Andre's like, no, he isn't.
Yeah.
And I do think that the show has tried, like, if we've kind of forgotten why this whole vendetta was kicked off.
Yeah.
Like, it really hasn't been brought up again, but it's like, okay, like, I mean, in some sense, Jack was kind of, like, played a little bit because they thought they were killing this really bad guy, and they ended up just, like, wiping out his family instead.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, Jack never seems to have any kind of remorse over that. and like, I think... like, in some ways, I think that the Drazens are maybe a little more, maybe they're just more pragmatic, but I think also that kind of presents itself in a way that might be read as, like, more merciful a little bit.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
they could just be like, yeah, we're just gonna, like, and I know that they try to kill the wife and daughter, but they also see them as useful tools, right? Like, they could just come in and be like, we're gonna get our revenge, don't care, whatever. But even that, I forget if it's Andre or Victor who has that line about, you know, we decided the sins of the father should not be visited on the daughter.
Yeah, that was Andre. That was a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of, yeah, it's just like that sort of thing where, I mean, I also realized that literally this entire season has gone by without Jack torturing anyone. Like, actually, you know, in sort of the 24 way.
Yeah. And I think that becomes... you know, there's the Zizek essay on this that we'll have to get to at some point. But I do think that becomes much more a hallmark of the show in the firmly, you know, war on terror post 9/11.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
World.
There was a moment where I think the highway patrol guy does say, let's roll when they're taking him. So I wonder, I'm pretty certain that is like an actual like Flight 93 reference.
Yeah, I wondered about that. yeah, because the show is sort of like, I mean, it's starting to lean into those kinds of things a little bit. But because of the nature of like the way the season was built for the outset, it doesn't. And I'm even interested to see how much that's present in season two, which I think is still a season where they're kind of finding their feet with the show.
Right.
Because Chloe does not arrive until season 3, is that correct?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And that to me is really where the show's identity gets a little more cemented, isn't that like 3, 4, 5 run?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I definitely agree. I'm interested in season two as like definitely an evolution past here, but I'm curious to see how much like what I think of as like the hallmarks of the show, like where they emerge, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of hallmarks, they really just had to bring the mole back in the most clumsy way possible. I mean, first of all, like the thing that gets Tony's attention is the like the schematics of the prison have been tampered with.
Yeah.
But it's the I don't think that that has any effect whatsoever on what happened in the in that prison.
It's like, gobbledygook.
Yeah, like it's sort of like, you know, you would think that they would, that they'd slipped out another way, but you know, the people in there clearly saw that it was just a place that had been booby trapped by laser, laser C5.
Yeah.
So it's just, C5. I don't know what. I just don't know why it was like, why was that? And then they try to do the Mason is the mole thing again.
Yeah. Bring it back the oldies.
Yeah.
Okay. I did do some research because it was really bothering me. Mm-hmm. So according to 24 Wiki, all right. This has not been on any of the like trivia or anything for the individual episodes, but I went to the Nina Myers character page, and apparently Sarah Clark was told that she was the mole before episode 20, which, if you remember, is the episode where all of a sudden it's pitch blackout when Mason and Jack are in that field. So that's when she knew that she was the mole. So since that episode, she has been playing the character with this knowledge, which I just am so confused by.
I mean, if you told me that she didn't know until they filmed this last scene of this episode, I would believe that.
100% would believe that. I honestly thought there was less stuff in the last few episodes than there was before that. It's like once they decided, they just like felt like the only way they could hide it is by not talking about it at all. I mean, you do get the, like, I think the one moment we sort of identified as like, you know, a clue, quote unquote, is, you know, Kim getting recaptured. And I think I'm trying to remember if it was last episode or two episodes ago where you kind of thought there was a moment that maybe they were hinting at it. And then, of course, there's been for a while now in the sort of like, you know, this is the longest day of my life kind of like lead in. There has been that moment where the voice Jack in voiceover says, you know, people I work with may be involved. And then it's a shot of Nina.
Yeah. From like the second or third.
Yes. Episode. Yeah. 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 And I did not, though I'm interested in what would happen if I did. I did not go back and track when that started, but I think
I'm pretty sure it was like in like the first eight episodes, it's been
in the lead-in for a while. It's a very weird situation.
I sort of got the feeling like maybe they were trying to do that with her having. There's things like where you could technically read it like that, or like, you know, shots of her like during this episode, but it just doesn't really feel like it's leading up to it. It's just like, you have this. I actually really like the chase that Kim has, her throwing the coffee in
Is that
that is this episode? Yeah.
Is that this episode? Yes, because she gets away. Yeah. Oh yeah, because I wrote Kim uses the oldest trick in the book. Good for her.
Yeah, it is good. I mean, like, obviously, it requires that guy to be incredibly dumb by walking over to her.
Yeah, I mean, he's across the room. Henchmen. Right.
Yeah, these are henchmen. He is actually still pursuing her, even though he has like this giant burn on his face.
And
she actually manages to untie herself underwater in like the Port of LA water, which is presumably extraordinarily disgusting. But
yeah, probably pretty disgusting. And she jumps a barbed wire fence at one point.
Yeah, like she
in one spot that doesn't have barbed wire.
Yeah, I mean, like she does a really good, like she just like runs up and then like jumps over. It is actually like this pretty good moment for her, even though that doesn't seem like in her nature.
Yeah,
but it's good. Yeah, I mean, but yeah, that chase is good.
As stupid as it is, I do kind of like the final seconds of the episode.
Yeah.
Like, everything you pointed out is correct in that it's extremely dumb and clumsy how they bring back the mole storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And also, sort of on that same note, you know, I mean, we took a little bit of a break from watching the show, but I totally forgot that Terry was pregnant. But you know what? I think that is probably a very similar viewing experience as people had while watching it. So they had to be mm-hmm. reminded again in this episode, like, the stakes of what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's a really good, like, I mean, Kiefer handles, I mean, Kiefer's acting these two episodes, like, once the Palmer bomb stuff is over, it's just, like, absolutely terrific.
Oh,
at least last, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Jack is going through more because he's knowing he's probably going to die for him.
Yeah.
But, like, he's just giving it. And Leslie Hope, obviously, she has a much different task there, but, like, it's just, like, the sort of mismatch between the two is interesting. Like, in terms of, like, emotional expressivity.
Yes.
It's just really, Jack is really bringing in. Terry's not really.
And I think,
not necessarily in a bad way. It's just, like, it's just different.
Yeah. And I think, well, she has to play it. And again, this is, like, part of the way they've just written her character very poorly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she has to play it in this kind of naive, almost dumb way of, like, everybody's on their way and is going to be safe. I mean, they've just been feeding her this line. And at this point, for her not to have any kind of skepticism about what she's being told seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah.
But I will say,
we also get Mason calling her a basket case.
Mason is so mean in these episodes. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like that Kiefer plays it in almost a subdued way, like an interior way. That I thought was really, really great. And yeah, I mean, I think Leslie Hope does as much as she possibly can with this material, but at this point they're just stringing her along.
Apparently there were extended episodes on the special edition DVD.
and so
on the wiki they have these sort of like italic sections.
And
you know, there's also the thing where I'm inclined to not consider these canon because they're that breaks with the format of the show to have extended episodes. But there is a moment apparently where she actually, after this phone call, like Nina and Terry are talking, and Terry reveals that she's pregnant, and Nina congratulates her, and the two embrace before Nina leaves to get back to work. And like, I would have liked to see that. That would have been interesting.
I think, okay. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, but they did film three different endings
for the
next episode, and I can see why that got cut. Presuming that, you know, they were sort of like planning out these two episodes somewhat close to one another and maybe knew what direction they were going to go in for the final episode. I think that moment is maybe too cruel in retrospect for this show in season one. Season 724 is doing that.
Yeah.
No question. In fact, it's doing that in the final episode. Right before. Like, that's what it's doing. But here they were sort of like, all right, we're not too distasteful.
First, like in terms of the final seconds, I do love how they just have Nina, or I guess it's probably Nina. I don't know if they actually like had her learn Serbian phonetically or something like that, but like she is just like they have her speaking Serbian exclusively so they can hold it the reveal until the actual shot of her on the phone.
But like, who else is it gonna be?
Yeah, it's just really funny. It's just like could they not have mentioned the name Yelena like once or twice before this exchange?
Yeah, I think the idea too is that, you know, as is revealed, she has maybe other masters than the
that too.
Right. And so
and technically she's not supposed to call them, I guess, just because it's like less secure, but still. Like
I felt like what the show maybe was trying to do and fails spectacularly at doing is sort of set up like, okay, there's really only three people who could be the mole, and it's Mason, Tony, and Nina. And I think that had that dynamic, like, if you reestablished the mole storyline four episodes ago and we kind of spent these different episodes with these moments where they're all doing suspicious things or things that could be interpreted that way.
Yeah.
But then it also seems like, why wouldn't you have some kind of like robot voice scrambler thing on the phone so that, because it's like there's only one female character that it could be. And so even if she's speaking another language, like, we know who this person is right away, even though I do like visually the way it's handled, that moment where we kind of get the little, and then she walks up, Tony Almeida, biggest sap in the world, walks up to him right afterwards, like, oh, hey, take a look at this. That was pretty funny.
But yeah, I mean, like, also, I don't know whether I like the sort of stuff where just Mason's just prowling around, like, confused why his network's not working.
No, I love that.
it is funny. It is definitely funny. It's like this arbitrary thing where Tony just absolutely assumes that it's not him, and then that's not her, so it must be Mason.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I love how he just kind of plays dumb to Mason. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't... I felt seen by George Mason. I felt like this is exactly how I would react in this situation.
It's yeah.
Like, you know, right when I need the technology, it fails me and I have no facility with it. And I have to go to someone else who I don't really respect to fix it for me.
Yeah. And was it him that like says that Mason's taking like too much of an attention what Palmer's doing next?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Which is like this completely nonsensical thing for him to say.
Yeah, I mean, this show does have to kind of like selectively find moments to make characters incredibly stupid.
Even Jack has that with Nina, like when he's on the phone with her. Yeah, like, you know, you have too many of these moments where Nina is getting away with it perfectly until she doesn't.
Yeah, and I think that's part of, you know, that's like the show's like doubly up against it, because on the one hand, you really only had a 13 episode arc. That arc becomes 24 episodes, and then you have like these dangling threads that you all of a sudden have to like tie together, but also, you know, produce like 11 more episodes. And to me, it's like, why does it take, you know, 7 episodes to firmly decide who this person is? Like, you'd think you'd want to be laying that groundwork earlier.
Yeah,
because I think it makes sense for the first half of the show to have all these red herrings and like double blinds and all of that. But in the second half, it just feels so haphazard, because you do. And I think episode 23 is like definitely the one that has to carry the most amount of that. Just like, we made this up as we went along, and we're kind of stuck a little bit now. But bear with us.
We have just a little bit more to talk about the Palmer stuff before we get to the finale. First, I love that moment where Palmer says that Sherry is not qualified to talk about higher purposes.
Yeah.
I guess we haven't really had much. I don't think we'll have much invocation of religion on these, except for, of course, for terrorist purposes. In the show generally, I don't think we'll have much invocation of religion. I just do like that sort of thing where like it does affirm that, you know, Palmer's almost certainly Christian, you know, just because it's the nature of obviously there's like just higher purposes in terms of like, you know, serving the people and all that, but still
I think this is another piece of evidence in this being actually the most like lib brain show, because everyone is kind of like a perfectly sort of like secular subject in that any kind of invocation of religion is either very vague, like to the point where that comment can even, you know, it's really like everybody is a civic religionist, right? And then of course the only bad, you know, the main bad people end up being, you know, religious fanatics, right?
I mean it very much
does feel right now that it like it's anticipating that, you know, post 9/11 a little bit, right? Where it's like, yeah, you know, everybody kind of has these vague sort of bromides and hand waving moments to, you know, something else or whatever. But like in the context of the show, you know, no one is seriously committed to anything beyond their job, which is like an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of jobs, I also love how the doctor just makes like he just does chest compressions for like 1 second before declaring that Alexis dead, and also Alexis has like his condition has deteriorated like 80% in the span of 10 minutes, right? I mean, you know, things can change rapidly in terms of bodies and health, but still, it's just very convenient that he dies just as he's arriving.
I'm just sort of they seem less mad about being ripped off than I would have expected.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like they sort of believed Mason when he was like, he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's also the thing where, like, I guess, like, Andre, like, the assumption of his brother being dead versus actually seeing him die in front of him is different, but still, like,
yeah.
He just has this extraordinarily more emotional reaction as the plot demands it. And it's his father who has to reel him in and, mm-hmm. you know, to say that they need her. Yeah, it's just like, you know, these sort of convenient character things.
And I feel like that moment could have been sold if they flipped the roles there, if Hopper's the one.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, I think that would have made more sense. And I think would have established, like, an interesting dynamic, which is that Andre really has been the one running the show.
Mm-hmm. And we should have gone more like, you know, I do like that the, like, Zoe Kravitz does the scene with Kim well, but I think it would have been even better if it was with Hopper.
Yeah, it just feels like... And this is nothing against Ivanic, who I think is really good in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, you've got the big guns here. Like, send in the big guns, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of weird the way that these last two episodes just... I mean, Hopper is like a tertiary character here until his final moments. And it's that's really, just such a weird... It's just so... It's so strange. And I don't think... You know, I mean, I think episode 23 suffers not necessarily for, like, any individual, like, person on the show, I think it's just, like, these sort of, like, structural conceit and the constraints of, like, production just made this, like, this had to be the episode that, you know, it had one ace in the hole, and then it had all twos after that, like, nothing. Like, it had one good card to play and it plays it right at the end, even if it's everything leading up to that is just as dumb as possible. But it still feels like a moment that, you know, is really like, that's why you make week to week TV.
Yeah.
Which is you can have, you know, one of the sort of most dire episodes of the whole season, but everybody forgets about it in those last few seconds where it's like, oh my gosh, like, what is going on,
So, like, as a bridge to the finale, what is this plan with Palmer and Jack? Like, I get why they're doing it, you know, like, to save Jack's daughter, but, like, you know, not that, you know, I would want to sacrifice Kim, but this is an insane plan to just, like, convince everyone for, like, 3 or 4 hours that he's dead.
I mean... It's even, like, I get why funnier they're doing that still. It really only ends up being, like, 45 minutes.
Well, that too, yeah.
Like, I think they're playing it out like he's going to have to pretend to be dead for a long time. But to me, it's like, well, you know, what you could do is, like, feed all of these conflicting stories.
Yeah.
And just have him not be seen. Like, him not showing up is suspicious, and if no one's getting a firm word on it, you know.
Yeah, you could have, like, some people saying, like, he's been rushed to the hospital, that he's... I also do like that the explosion apparently does not alert anyone at the party below.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, well, not the biggest explosion, but
isn't
still.
Isn't the party kind of over by that point? Because next time we see the ballroom, it's totally empty.
Yeah, I mean, they say to Keith and Nicole, like, that they're still downstairs at the party or something like that.
Oh, I thought they were asleep.
No.
I thought they were, like, down in their room. Oh, okay. I wasn't paying close attention.
I do like the idea of the party just turning into a rager, but I don't know, it's that loud.
Also, there's just, like, way too many people floating around to sell the idea that Palmer, like, it's not just Secret Service. Yeah. Like, then you have ATF agents up there. You have all these other people, just random people walking around. It's like, even in the event that Sherry doesn't leak this, like, it's getting out. Like, 20 people have seen him.
Yeah, it's just the thing where, like, you know, presumably the Drazens were actually already embracing after the bomb had went off, like, without even hearing on the news or whatever that he was alive.
They don't have the best follow through.
Yeah. And, like, their hope is just that Jack will be the one to pick up the phone also.
So and then they call the hotel. That moment confused me completely. I felt like I totally missed something. Because it's also like, weren't they trying to kill him? Like,
yeah.
So what? I just don't. And maybe it's because the plan has not gone how it was supposed to go. I don't know. Maybe there was some other role for, you know, maybe Alexis was going to be the one who, you know, took out Jack or whatever. And now they have to kind of, like, cobble this thing together. But
yeah,
it's such a strange setup. Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to even think when, like, was this their plan all along to get Jack to bring the bomb to Palmer, because they haven't attempted anything after they didn't attempt anything before or after they broke out Victor. I guess like maybe they were just hoping that Ira would handle things and then like have this whole other plan.
And maybe they are just making it up on the fly, but like I think it would have been more interesting to give us a scene where they're making it up on the fly.
Yeah.
But maybe that's like, maybe in later seasons, I could be wrong, but I think maybe in later seasons we would have gotten a few more scenes with the villains just talking among themselves, like getting audience knowledge that the, you know, quote unquote good guys don't have.
Yeah.
And I think the show this season was reluctant to do that, partially for like suspense reasons, right? Like we get those early scenes with Mandy and the rest of the gang and Ira, and then it kind of goes away from that. Because like after that, someone is always kidnapped by that guy. So there's always someone there kind of overhearing things.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does feel like I could totally see a version of this that's like, okay, things have not gone to plan. Do we want to try and get Jack and Palmer still, or are we just going to take the W for now and get Victor out of here? They get greedy, though. That's the problem. Yeah. They got greedy. But I want to see them like coming to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like it does make perfect sense that Victor would know that this would happen. It's just they didn't count on Jack being like so good at his job. I mean, that was the moment I was trying to think of with Victor, with our last Prime Hopper voice, where he's like talking with Dina, and he's like that is the point, like that his daughter is dead.
Part of me wonders if the show was a little worried about how bad the accent was, and that's why they kind of backseated Hopper here.
Yeah.
But they took the wrong tact with that. They should have done more of it, because the more he talks, the more you just kind of like fall under the spell of this weird choice.
Yeah.
But because he talks so little, it still just like sticks out every time he opens his mouth.
I agree.
It's like just have him be the guy these last couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I really don't know what led to that. That decision.
I don't know. It's just like maybe Hopper was just like getting tired. Like he was just going so hard that he had to step back a bit. I don't know.
Maybe they were telling him to like reel it back and he just refused. He's like, I'm Dennis Hopper. You're a television director. You're gonna tell me what to do?
Mm-hmm.
I made the last movie. You can't tell me what to do.
Yeah. Now I'm thinking about if they had, you know, made this show earlier and they basically got just like the roundelay of people that Columbo had. They should have just like had like every single person be like, you know, this random heavy actor.
Yeah. I think I think a version of 24 that gets made in like 1987 is an interesting thought experiment. Weirdly, I think the first season could have been basically unchanged, like in a lot of the dynamics. Like you could have done the same storyline in 1987.
I think so.
You just would have had like a different group of people doing it.
I like how long Jack is just on that dock. He's just like looking in, even though he has no vantage point whatsoever.
He's got like those that little binoculars or whatever. It's nice to see him use some gadgets.
I also like the gadget, especially, that really cracks me up is the monitor that just pops up in his car. Well, also like that they just randomly bring in this last guy that has like a significant number of lines in the last episode.
Just like this random arc up guy. I felt like we had seen him before.
Yeah, and it's like this guy that Jack is referring to like by first name. And
like
this...
I was like, did I forget this guy? Another episode, but I don't think we have.
Yeah, Paul Wilson. It's just like this random guys just around. Oh, he's actually in season 7 also as a different character, but yeah.
that's not quite as strange as Milo's long absence, but pretty funny.
They should have brought Milo back.
Oh man, and that's such a perfect place to bring him back too. Yeah, because at that juncture, like, you know, who can Jack really trust?
Yeah,
well, okay, here's this guy that I know was not in the loop. Mm-hmm. That is just kind of like a contractor type guy. Like,
yeah,
we know he's clean because he was actually trying to do his job when I was sabotaging him, you know. Like that would be a great moment.
Yeah,
maybe the actor that I forget the actor's name that plays Milo. Maybe he was just busy. I don't know. Maybe he had some other show he had to be on for a few years.
Yeah, I also do like how after, you know, everything's supposedly dead, like everyone's just still milling around, just just doing random other things.
Yeah. What are they doing here?
Yeah. Mason was probably the first one to know, but still, you know, you would think that this news that the guys who are definitely trying to kill Palmer are dead, like, that would be a relief.
Well, there's a lot of paperwork to be done, I'm sure. Yeah, this is a bureaucratic agency at the end of the day.
I just also like how just Mason just orders like all the monitors to turn on the news in the last episode. It's just a great little moment. And like you get like Tony like Carlos Bernard like really trying to like sell it.
Yeah.
Just like him just like putting his hands back and like again when he learns that he's alive.
Yeah.
It's just like this good moment.
Is there any Palmer stuff you want to talk about?
I mean, it's mostly just like I do love how just leak the final images of him just like leaving, like that's the last thing that we see of him in this in this season. It's just him leaving and Sherry just back in the ballroom. You wouldn't really think that scene would, you know, be the end, like cut to a commercial break, but it just smashes right to Jack furiously driving through the through the streets of LA.
Okay.
Tearing through red lights.
Yes. The Palmer thing is weird because there's 100% a version of the show where we never see those characters again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They could totally drop them the next season.
Yeah.
Like, it seems such a weird way to end. I mean, knowing, of course, that they come back is another thing, but.
I mean, like, that Sherry comes back, especially.
Yes. And I love the way Hopkins shoots the scene where David, like, freaks out on her. When she's in the corner of the bathroom, mirrors on either side. Hopkins bringing back the mirrors.
Yeah.
And, like, Palmer is, like, terrifying in that scene.
Yeah, he, like, you know, it's like, you know, again, I was thinking about Avery Brooks, but, like, this is, like, him, like, this is Haysbert going full Avery Brooks mode.
Yes, yeah.
Again, I have not seen a full episode of DS9, but I've seen the scene where he hits Garak in the pale moonlight dozens of times, and it sort of reminded me of that energy.
Yeah,
he's just like towering.
I think that having watched all of Deep Space Nine and being a huge fan of the show, I do think that Avery Brooks brings a different kind of presence in like the day-to-day moments than Haysbert is bringing. Like, I think Haysbert really does play this guy as kind of like a sort of optimistic, sort of naive, but like a good man in kind of a simple way and not in a bad way, but then confronted with these moments, he just like loses control because stuff he thinks is like he's losing it. Whereas I think Avery Brooks has like a real gravitas, even in like the baseball episode. What's so funny about that episode is the way that he's able to have like a good time and get everybody playing baseball, but it's because like he respects the game so much. I think there's a difference there, but in these I do think there's like I can see the kind of resonances between these performances, because although I will say that I think Avery Brooks, like Dennis Haysbert, comes off as almost like a little unhinged here, like
agree.
And I think Avery Brooks in those like rage moments comes off as like this guy is taking total command and like no one is, like, he doesn't come off as like, it's not really losing control. Like, he's modulating his control, you know? Yeah. Whereas really here, it feels like Palmer is just like losing his grip.
Yeah.
I think the first time in the back half of the show that I like felt bad for Sherry.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's like, you know, again, like there's this thing where like it's sort of, you know, I'm kind of with both her and Mike in that this plan is just ridiculous.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
For him to hide out. But like, it is, you know, and sort of interesting that like, her like last like defining moment in this season, like, or the thing that breaks the camel's back, is, you know, something that she's kind of right about.
Yeah.
Like that's a good touch. But like, for this scene to work, you know, you do kind of have to feel like Palmer's like capable of like this violence.
Yeah.
And like and Haysbert really sells it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this really, you know, extreme moment. And I do like how he like so just brings it back to like her like losing touch with what it means to be a parent and like a wife and things like that. It's sort of, you know, like, obviously, you know, it's a bit tinged, but, you know, it works. Like that like all these Palmer Sherry scenes in this last episode are just killer, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he's really in that scene deflecting a lot of his own guilt onto her because of I really do think that it feels less like this scene could really come off at the writer's grasp as the writer's grasping for straws if it's not played right. And I think Haysbert sort of understands that, okay, I'm playing a guy who really wants to be good, but has a really simple notion of what that is, and is a little bit like blinkered about what other people have sacrificed for him to be in this position. And then to see this moment, it's like where he really loses it, I think, is because like he doesn't have this control, and he resorts to this like kind of latent violence to to get it back. Yeah, it was like, on paper it's a scene that doesn't work, but the performances really pull it off. And I think, like, again, not to be down on the writers, I think that's about trusting your actors too. Being like, these people can do this. Like, this is where we need to get to in this story, you know, for whatever reason this is where they wanted to get to, and like they just trust their actors in this last episode to get it. And I think they do just incredible work, as they've been doing the whole second half of the season.
Yeah, I also do love just Mike's, he's like, I don't want to get in the middle of
this.
And like he really sells also that sort of like frantic trying to pull Palmer away.
Yes,
like it's just like really good. I'm so glad that we get so much of Jude Scolilla in just like the rest of the show. Like, we just get so much of him. It's
he's great.
Always fun to see him.
He's really great. Particularly, if I recall correctly, you know, in those seasons where Palmer's in the White House, he gets to be a little more of an operative.
Definitely.
Which is fun to watch. But since you referenced it, I have to say that Jack's assault on the pier.
Oh my god!
Is so cool.
It's so amazing. Like, okay, so like first, I have to say, like, I actually sort of am kind of surprised throughout the, you know, throughout 24, like this season at least, there hasn't been like really a episode, you know, there's been good, like really good episodes, but there's not been one that I like truly felt strongly about that, like I thought was like literally like a great episode. But this is a great episode.
This is
you know, I would probably say this is probably as good as 24 gets. Just like everything just finally clicks in this episode. Jack just like, well, Jack first like totally nailing the phone call with Nina.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I also love how Nina's like so nonchalant about it. Like,
I don't know how to tell you this, Jack. Your daughter's dead. She bit the dust.
It's great.
Yeah, I can tell that she's kind of freaking out about this. Like, I'm really exposing myself here.
That, and then Jack getting to dual wield again. Just driving that van through the back.
The van blows through. Does he like then hop out and like take cover or something?
Yeah.
And then just like, man, him jumping across the docks, like incredible scene.
Yeah. Like, you just get like that shot of him hold it, like having reloaded, having his two guns in front of him, that he like jumps over, he's like blind firing his gun.
Yes.
So then like just running. And then you get like the one time he actually gets hit is after Andre dies, and like Victor is like holding his gun sideways and then shoots Jack in the stomach.
Yeah. Oh man. And then that scene when Hopper goes in for the kill, but he's out of bullets. It's just, oh man. It's incredible. Yeah.
I always forgot that they hold it so long, but it like works so well.
There's just so much patience there after like a really great but chaotic sequence where everything finally just like explodes. And then to have the patience for that moment of like, we're going to take a couple beats and like, you don't know what's going to happen. And then he just blows him away. Just loses it. Yeah. He's shooting into the water after his body's already fallen in.
It's just, you know, obviously Jack will get to shoot many, many more people like in a single moment later on. But yeah. And I sort of forgot, like, after, you know, there's this initial thing where he, like, storms the warehouse, and then, like, they like, go onto the docks. I sort of forgot, like, oh, maybe there's going to be, it's just going to be, like, pretty, you know, not quite weak, but, you know, sort of just, like, you know, just more like the firefights that we've seen before. But then it, like, really goes for it, just Jack just running across the pier.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and, like, just, and both Victor and Andre just firing at him. It's all this like these sparks flying everywhere,
and we have that boat just kind of slowly coming in. And I mean, everything is just set up like in that sequence. It's set up so perfectly. It's like the stakes are clear, like there's a timeline, like he has to beat them there. Yeah, there's you, like guys yeah. in the way. It was really nicely yeah. done.
I mean, it's just funny how they have the Victor and Andre have just opened the garage and they're just like waiting there, just yeah, standing, yeah. And then he just comes through. Just a great bit of staging, and also really the boat just like. Just cruising away afterwards, just yeah, like just a great like, sight gag.
I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, I was thinking like, oh, did he shoot those guys in the boat? Were they firing him? And then you just see as like
yep.
Jack's just staring, like emptying his empty gun into Victor in the water. You just see the boat just driving
yes,
away.
That felt like that felt very much like a sort of spooky L.A. Thomas Pynchon moment of like, where did this boat come from? Who's operating this boat? Like they disappear into the night, whoever they mm-hmm. are. You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, jeez,
yeah.
What a yeah. Like you said, yeah. This is a great episode.
Yeah, this is like
I think we've had some really, really good ones, but this is
yeah. like good, like really good episodes of 24 specifically with all the baggage that comes with.
Yeah,
but then like this is a great episode of television. Like,
yeah,
flat out.
Yeah, this is yeah. nuts, and like all the stupid bullshit that gets us here like doesn't matter. Like, this is what makes this show good. Is like it can fumble the ball over and over and over again, but when it's crunch time, like. And they're able to bring it together like this. It, like, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that, like, okay, the moves that got us here were mm-hmm. sometimes just, like, so inane mm-hmm. And ridiculous. Like, it all pays off so, so wonderfully.
Yeah. And then you get that beautiful button of just Mason happy as a clam just, like, walking back. Like, hey, get this. Yeah.
And then...
like, the tag teams arrived. Jack went in without them. And, like, seven guys down. Jack's the last man standing.
Yeah. And then when he's on the phone with Jack, he's like, I don't know whether to congratulate you or demand your resignation. It's so good. I don't know. I really feel like Xander Berkeley found, like, a really nice pocket for Mason in these episodes. Of like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of likes being in charge.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of likes that he's not the one out there with either. Like, he's in his element. It's
yeah.
fantastic.
I get why you have to have Jack in a position of authority at the start of the season, but you should have had Mason just in the bird's nest already.
Yeah.
Like, Mason just should be... Mason should have been like second credited main cast member.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes down to it, like, and like he's just been guest starring this whole season also.
Yeah.
Like he hasn't even gotten the special guest star credit. It's just, he's just like an element, but he's like the sharpest element.
Well, and it also seems so silly, like because the Alberta Green stuff doesn't go
oh,
anywhere.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
why
yeah.
isn't that just Mason mm-hmm. in that role? Because he's yeah. someone we've seen already, someone we're familiar with. He's a great mm-hmm. presence. Just wonderful
yeah.
work from Xander yeah. Berkeley.
Yeah.
And yeah,
Nina's
really
just,
incredible stuff.
That like music sting when Nina hears that Jack is alive is
yes.
just so good.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like, I mean, she's like time yeah. to motor.
Yeah. I guess like the one thing that you could really say is a contrivance is just Terry's following her into the back room.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I think that watching Terry and Leslie Hope in this last episode is like both like a good feeling and a bad feeling. Good is like it's a good, you know, development, you know, like she handles it well.
Yeah.
You know, she has that sort of like that last conversation she has with Nina, like where she's like sort of she slowly realizes that Nina's the mole, or like, you know, that she's killed someone right behind her.
Yeah, she sees
like,
the blood
like she,
on the
yeah.
floor.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she handles that like all really well. But also like you like I feel bad because Leslie Hope has had nothing to do for the last 8 episodes, and then she spends the last episode just duct taped and tied with electrical wire to a chair.
Yeah.
It's sort of, yeah, like an ignoble end for sure.
Oh my gosh. I mean, people must have flipped when that clock came up at the end. That was it. Like, it's bleak.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to kind of end on, like, some kind of, you know, confrontation moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I didn't remember the specifics of how she dies, right?
Yeah,
I sort of remember that, you know, she ends up, like, captured by Nina or something. And mm-hmm. I didn't know if it... I couldn't remember if it was some kind of, like, hostage standoff or what. But
yeah.
the fact that it's, like, almost an afterthought. Like,
yeah, like
Jack
it's...
walks into that hallway and those guys are, like, tending to the other dead dude. And then it, like, hits him. And then it's, like... that's the end of the whole season.
Yeah.
Right? Like, brutal.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, like yeah. did not pull any punches.
Yeah, I remembered that there was that sort of flashback thing, but I thought it might have been like a little bit more like tacky or something like that. But like it sort of underscored for me that just how little time we've had with them. It's just like three clips all from the first episode.
I think that's maybe the only bad choice in the episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, it sort of underscores that, but also, like, it just worked for me because, like, Kiefer just looks like he's aged 10 years in 24 hours.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, like, it sort of underscores that for me. It's just, like, how much hell he's been through in this.
Yeah, well, and they're kind of, like, they're sort of, like, sepia-toned, which is calls attention to it
a
little bit.
I kind of wish that they had, like, you know, actually just gone out and shot more footage, you know? Yeah. Like, I was actually thinking, like, maybe what if they did, like the Paris, Texas thing? Like of that super 8 home movie thing.
Yeah.
They should have just like gone full tilt and just made it like as emotionally devastating as possible.
Yeah, just go all the way. Because I like the idea too of breaking the continuity in that way.
Yeah, I mean like they broke it already with the flashback, really. So it's just they could have gone a little bit further with that.
Yeah, but. Yeah, I can see that. I think it's like it's not a bad impulse to have, but they needed to go all the way with it.
Yeah, I agree.
But it doesn't even matter that I think that's sort of like a weird choice a little bit. Like it doesn't quite come off as well as it could have. Like last moment is damn. I was like, you know, and I knew it was coming too. I was just shocked at how it arrived there and how it presented itself. And I mean, man, everything feels bad at the end of this season.
Right, yeah.
Like the Palmer stuff feels bad. Yeah. The Jack stuff feels bad. Like nothing... There's no, like, it's such an interesting choice to have this big victorious shootout and then pull the rug out from under everything.
Yeah. And it's just like I forgot that, like, Terry's just dead. Like, she doesn't even get, like, the actual scene where she actually dies or, like, she gets something to say. Or even that, like, Kim, like, if Kim, like, comes in and, like, she's part of it, it's just, like, Jack and his dead wife. And it's just, like, this perfect sort of, like, it just like shifts the show into another register, really. I guess like first, like Nina actually speaks like good German. It's just nice touch, and like you get this woman just calling her again and again. But I do really love, well, first that poor like CTU like maintenance worker or something like that just gets unceremoniously shot.
Just trying like to do their job.
Asian, like maybe the most prominent Asian character we've actually had recently in the show so far.
Yeah, probably.
You know, which has its own resonance for me.
I
do love just how like concealed that go bag she has is, that just like briefcase that she has hidden behind a panel.
Oh yeah, she puts like that weird thing on it that opens it. I'm fine with gadgets that don't make any sense to me. Kind of cool, and I didn't question how it worked. I was just cool.
It also just really was really funny to me. Like that Terry checked the women's restroom before, just remembering Tony just sneaking in to take out Jamie.
Yeah, it also reminded me how much the CTU restrooms don't match the interior of CTU. Like maybe maybe this is like an older building that they retrofit for CTU and they just ran out of money for the improvements to the because the restroom looks like it hasn't been touched in like 40 years.
Yeah. Also, we get that like, we bring back Jamie just so we can see her get her slit.
Yeah.
And, and you get even Mason like sort of like flinching at it.
Yeah. Yes, Sandra Berkeley plays that so well. Because it's like he's like kind of like he's not upset by it. He's like grossed out by it. Which is such a funny way for him to react.
It's just I also like get like how well he I forgot when he's talking to Kim and he like adopts like slightly more paternalistic
voice.
Yeah. It's just so funny. You get that and, like he immediately switches to like ordering tackiness to get there.
Yes,
but then like he actually does like, you know, of course like he just shifts into that mode so well.
Yeah.
You know, just like or like of like, you know, taking charge once he hears Jack, you know, accusing Nina.
Man, and then that moment where Jack's got Nina at the end.
Oh, yeah. And like, it works, especially because he just got that scene where he shot Victor after holding her for so long.
And then, you have Mason kind of leaning into Jack. Like,
he's just leaning, like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, he's like trying. It's such. I loved that because it's like, yeah. He's not like, he could try to like physically restrain him, but he's not going to do it. He's mm-hmm. like, you have to choose to do what you're going to do here.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'll clean up. It's almost like he's a little bit like, I think this would be bad for you to do this, but I'll clean up the mess yeah. if you do it, you know, like kind of yeah. like he doesn't really take an authoritative tone. He takes like an almost brotherly kind of mm-hmm. tone, which is so,
yeah, yeah.
so interesting.
Yeah, and you got poor yeah. Tony right there. He's just like across the car. Just,
Tony,
don't you do it, Jack.
Moron. I am excited for better Tony seasons than this one. Cause
well, yeah. I mean, I think this is like a great Tony season, but it's like it's great because of how much of a dope he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just like, you get that like, I mean, even though we haven't had like really a Nina Tony, you know, relationship scene in like 3 or 4 episodes, but like you just get that like long shot of him just like looking just really sad,
like it's his girlfriend.
Yeah. It's just really funny. I also did like, apparently this was only on the special edition, but it was on my copy of the scene where Nina says that she's gonna be transferring out of that office.
Oh, I also saw that. And then I read the wiki and I realized that wasn't in the episode.
Yeah, like that's a great like, you know, I think that's almost its own sort of cruel scene.
Yes.
Cruel in a funnier way than like, well, the pure cruelty.
Yeah, because I think, again, like, so they had 3 endings. One where, the one that we got.
Yeah.
One where Terry is not shot and is just alive and fine.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then one where she's shot and her fate is, like, uncertain, I think.
Right, like she's rushed to the ER.
Yeah. And I think like that moment, because it does seem like Nina doesn't really want to kill this woman.
Yeah, like literally she only kills her because the woman says like nothing could connect you to Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's really the reason why Nina kills her.
Yes.
It's because like she heard her speaking in German. So.
Yeah. Like that, like she knows a little bit. And apparently I did not know this, but apparently like people who watched the show were in disbelief that Terry was dead and spent like the interim between season 1 and 2, like,
oh jeez,
like theorizing about how actually she was alive and it was like uh-huh. it was like a fake out and whatever. And I appreciate the show for not, like, I don't think this is ambiguous at all.
No,
like it's very clear. But yeah. I do think that the fans theorizing really did anticipate the turn the show would take later with this kind of stuff. And to some extent, that's established here in season 1, because we do get, like, you know, the episode where maybe Jack is dead or maybe Nina is dead, right?
Yeah.
And those always end up being resolved.
Mm-hmm.
But I think those moments really built up to this moment where it's like, no, this person yeah. actually is dead.
Yeah.
And it's one of the first, I mean... I think it's one of the first really, like, this is all shows do this now, so it's passé, but I think this was one of the first big shows that was like, yeah, principal cast member, important person, dead, like yeah. firmly dead.
You know, it's like the, what was like in MASH, the character that dies?
Yes, yeah.
It's like that's sort of like, you know,
yep.
you know, obviously that was like very not much something that happened then, and still like to this degree. I wonder exactly how influential like 24 was like on Game of Thrones or something like that. Obviously Game of Thrones was based on a book, but still on book series, but still it's just like this willingness to, like, go for it. There's a shock element to this, but like it does feel right
for yes the show, yeah
ultimately. I think partially because we just know where how much more Jack goes through
yeah.
in the later seasons, but like it really sets it up well.
Yeah, I think if Terry is alive at the end of this, it's still a really good episode of 24, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's not like a great episode of TV.
Yeah,
and I mean this episode still, I think, routinely makes it on like lists of best TV episodes.
Yeah,
stuff like that. I think it was on the. This has been like probably a decade, but I think it was on like TV Guide or something. Did a top
yeah.
100 episodes list, and this made it into like the top 10. Mm-hmm. Which yeah. there's some recency bias there, but still, yeah. I mean, I think it's. Well, mm-hmm. I cannot like I really cannot imagine having watched this the first time.
Yeah,
like that would just like, because there's no yeah, just despite like the MASH episode, there's no template for this.
Mm-hmm.
And to make that decision at the end of the show, I think is such a strong move, and shows some real confidence in like the concept that you have and the characters that mm-hmm. you have. As mm-hmm. much as I really think, you know, Leslie Hope got the short end of the stick the whole season.
Yeah.
It does feel dramatically like the absolute right choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get back to talking about this, we're like wrapping this up. I do love the scene where Jack is like asked the guy to call the harbor master, and they have just these like Brooklyn accents or something like that.
Yeah, like what? I couldn't tell. You know, I'm not an expert in these kind of accents, but I was like, is he like? That sounds like Boston or something. Yeah. Or yeah. Like, what is going on there?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like, maybe that's just like a universal maritime accent.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
That all sailors.
Yeah.
Have.
And I really, really love. Well, first, there's that great like final shootout between Jack and Nina where he like crashes into her.
Just like shooting through the windshields at each other.
It's
really
so good.
Great.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that shot you pulled out from very early in the show where Jack is in the limo and the bullet goes right into where his eye is at on the windshield.
Yeah. Man, like that the pan that they have like as Jack is running to the server room to the news broadcast where it says that Jack is the man who saved Palmer's life.
Yeah.
Like that's just such a great, great moment. It's just like it's like this perfect, you know, reminding of him of how much he's gone through, but also just like how it's almost kind of futile for him. Just because like he lost this.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And of course the silent clock.
Which will get overused later in the show, but which is so good here.
Mm-hmm. It's just, especially because there's that fade out also.
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like this great conclusion. Like, you know, obviously, I assume that 24 was already greenlit for a second season by this point. But if this was where the show ended, it would have been like a really great ending. Also.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it does, you know, it does set up the show. You know, in some ways, I think the show has at times suffered from having too many people floating around that we really have to care about. And
yeah,
so it was probably inevitable that, you know, they had to dispatch some people. I'm interested to see how the second season feels in that regard. But I really do think, like, again, I just agree with you that dramatically this works, even if at the same time I'm like, Leslie Hope deserves so much better. but, you know, I suppose there's probably some satisfaction as an actor to having, you know, this kind of like really, you know, famous kind of like being so integral to the identity of the show in this way, even if it does kind of preclude your further involvement. I think it's still, you know, I hope she wears it as a badge of honor because,
yeah, I think so.
In some ways she got a little bit of a payoff at the end that was worth it. So.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's sort of, it is like a sight to see her being so helpless, though that effect is lessened by just how many times she's been helpless beforehand.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just like, you know, seeing like the sort of naivete of her, like, following after Nina as she's like hurriedly walking into that server room. It's just like this, you know, it is like this sort of like sacrificial thing in a certain way.
Yeah.
And it does really work.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in retrospect, it's, like, I think the last time they see each other in person is like the 1 to 2 p.m. episode,
yeah.
Which in retrospect is like, so again, just another really brutal choice.
Yeah.
Of like, they do get, you know, the phone conversation before Jack goes in. And I think that's a nice moment. But I think even more than that, just kind of stressing like how there's a famous anecdote from some writer and someone should remind me who this is, because it's really going to bother me. You know, basically being on a train platform with someone and being like, you see that guy over there, you know, if he falls on the tracks and dies, everything he's done today becomes the most important thing that's happened in his life. Jesus. Right. Whereas if he doesn't, like, this is just a totally inconsequential day. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think what happens here is that all of a sudden, all the previous stuff of like, and the conceit of the show just heightens this because we are minute to minute. But the whole previous day becomes like, well, yeah, the last moment we really got with them that was like a normal moment was like 24 hours ago, which on the one hand feels a little silly because it's like,
yeah,
in TV world, we're only getting really like a few minutes of these characters normal, right?
Right.
But at the same time feels like, yeah, you never know the moment where like the shoe drops and all of a sudden everything kind of becomes the most important hour of your life, right? And and I think that works really well at the end as a way to end the show on this kind of like, yeah, everything kind of comes out of the blue and all of a sudden a day is gone and like everything has changed so consequentially.
The flashbacks again sort of underscore just how normal it is, like how sort of like self-consciously goofy those that opening was. But yeah, it's just it is a shock.
Yeah.
Just more than anything. Like it just like really lands exactly the way it needs to.
Yeah, it's great. 10 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it took them 24 episodes to get there, but they made a great episode of TV.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how many great episodes we're actually gonna get from now on. Unfortunately. I mean we'll get great seasons, I think, but yeah. I don't know about individual episodes.
Like, I would guess we will get several seasons that are stronger than this, but I don't know.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that once you've done this, you can really top yourself in a way that feels true.
Yeah.
I think it kind of puts you in a pattern of escalation that just like by its nature gives you diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the escalation, but also the sort of like repetition. Like there are, you know, certainly a few moments that really call back to this.
Yeah.
To this episode. So I don't really know if they can only just really shock in a certain way from now on. So,
well, it's like once you've decided that your show is this kind of show.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think this is like the problem Game of Thrones had. I didn't watch it because I don't care. But but I do think that that's why everybody was just like tired of it by the end.
Oh, certainly.
Because once you start pulling these tricks, it's like, well.
Yeah, you can only really just go bigger or like more in terms of spectacle.
Yeah.
Which 24 is not really the show for.
I do.
We'll get more budgets, but still.
Yeah, I do hope we get to see more, you know, kind of action set pieces like in this last episode. And I think we will.
Yeah,
I think definitely. Those ramp up a little bit, which will be fun.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be hopefully going to be pretty fun. We're going to get lots more 21st stupidity.
Yeah,
soonish.
I don't know, you know, I'm just very excited to see how the show develops now. I feel like the first season, you know, both for us and for the show was kind of like, what is this going to be? What do I actually remember? And now, you know, I think we're just like in kind of like, I mean, I think the final moments of season one are justly, you know, notorious. And now it's kind of like, it's going to be interesting to see the weird little pockets of the show that pop out over the next, you know, 8 seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're definitely going to get those. Shall we announce what we're going to be doing in between seasons?
I think we've been kicking around some ideas, right? I think we really want to look at Stephen Hopkins some more.
Yes. This is the last episode we'll have before Legacy.
So. Yeah.
Perfect
so,
time.
Yeah. I think we've been pretty clear about how much his episodes elevate the show and how much his style informs the show. I mean, he really made the show stylistically what it is. And it'll be up to other directors to follow that. I don't really know why he never directs anything.
I don't know.
It seems a little odd, especially since he's like friends with Kiefer.
Yeah, and he's definitely not part of the like the early, you know, like the trend that's now become where like the one of the creators, like executive producers, is like a big time director that directs like one or two episodes and then dips, like with Fincher or like, you know, he's clearly like a journeyman, certainly.
Yeah. So
in his own way. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we want to watch some film work of Stephen Hopkins and kind of enjoy his work a little bit more, since we'll be moving on to maybe less interesting visual stylists. Although I'm still willing to be surprised. I mean, a lot of directors end up working on 24. So,
oh, yeah.
And I'm interested to see how Kassar's style develops over so many episodes. He ends up directing, you know, like 60 some, I think, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll be looking at our favorite auteur, Stephen Hopkins. I don't know how long we're going to do that. And maybe we'll also watch it. I kind of maybe want to squeeze in maybe like a recent Kiefer, like movie.
Yeah. I mean, that we should probably finally get around to at least like one or two 24 core films or things as well.
Yeah.
I've been, especially because I've been watching Call of Duty speedruns more and more. I'm very much touting around the possibility of, I don't know, like doing Twitch streams or something like that, or like talking about,
yeah,
like, or like you watch as I play, or like if you want to try yourself and play.
Oh, I would love to watch you play Call of Duty, and that would be a fun time.
Yeah, definitely. It seems like more and more like it's just fascinating seeing how like it infiltrates, like this sort of 24 core mindset has infiltrated all of pop culture. So
yeah,
there's definitely lots for us to kick around.
Yeah. Although I will say, I want to make a definitive ruling. Neither Top Gun or Top Gun Maverick are 24 core.
Yes, that is actually true.
They're a different kind of thing.
Yes.
They're not 24 core though. So no. This isn't just a category that I throw around whenever I want to make a joke on Twitter. It's actually been theorized.
Yes.
I have some ideas about it.
Yes.
It is also very funny.
Yes, it is. And we hope that's how you have taken this season of 24 Hours Don't Make an Ideology, and that you will continue to join us just in the random things that we get up to and look at, because this is fun.
Yeah.
But I hope that it's also insightful for you. I don't know if it's certainly insightful for us just to observe the insanity that is 24/21st century America.
Yeah, it's been great. And I think, you know, I think as we move through the show, we'll be able to talk about, like, I think this is a really a key period for both of us to look back on politically.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, you know, we'll get some more of that. Hopefully get some guests on the show at some point, too.
Yeah.
It's something we want to do. So, yeah, lots to look forward to.
Yes.
I'm really excited to watch the fifth Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
that'll be my first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
That way. Yes. Thank you. And please join us as we move further. As we've passed limbo now, so watch as we move into lust.
Yes, forever chasing Beatrice, who is Terry, who is dead.